what you're about to hear is an incoherent mess.
Hello and welcome to yet another episode of The Masked Podcasters. Who are these strange people coming at you through the magic of podcasting? My name is Shannon and as usual, joined here by my brother Jake.
That's very peppy of you, Shannon. You sound re-energized.
I was literally dead. I was on death's door. I'm not dead anymore and I'm celebrating life with quite possibly one of the weirdest movies we've covered.
Oh, God. Glad you said it early, Shannon.
And so we're going to do this. We might also touch on, I think we'll do a little bit of a preview mini kind of wrap up of Doctor Strange as well. If we're going to put two very odd movies together,
they're not
on the same planet in terms of oddness, no. But they certainly are journeys for the audience, shall I say.
For sure. You've chosen a weird one to get us back into the swing of things, Sean. You didn't go super popular. You went completely out there, never heard of this movie, and now I'll never unsee it.
Well, you know what I'm like. I like the weird stuff. I like the twisted stuff. I like being challenged as an audience member. There's a time and place for popcorn movies, and sometimes you want to switch on something and turn your brain off.
Was it a challenge to stay awake, or was that the...
It wasn't. I loved it. Like I the movie we're talking about, we should probably. I mean, you've read. This is the thing I hate about podcasts. They're like, we should introduce them. You know what the movie is. You've clicked on the episode with the name in it.
You're listening.
There's no sizzle for me. It's not a surprise. We're talking about the killing of a sacred deer.
Yep.
And it's got a pretty good cast in it. At least the first
very good couple. Cast.
Colin Farrell, Nicole Kidman and Barry Keoghan, who there's a little bit of interest around, probably because of Eternals, but also he's in the new Batman movie.
Yes.
In a cameo. Is it acceptable now to spoil? Like,
I think didn't we already spoil it when we did the Batman? I can't remember anything we talked about in that movie. But I'm pretty sure we spoiled that.
He's the Joker in the Twilight Batman. So he's got a little bit of interest in him at the moment. There are some choices, some directing choices and some acting choices in this, which is obviously led from the director, which make this, I think, a little bit of a hard task to watch. But it's a fascinating story. It's a movie I've been wanting to watch for ages, having heard about it. And it skews very much into my wheelhouse.
This is a perfect movie for you, Shane. What do we do? Midsummer. It's a very similar type of weirdness that is Midsummer. Not the same kind of movie.
I like the sense of foreboding. This is not a horror movie in the sense that it's not a traditional horror movie.
Scary.
I'd call it. Would you call it a horror movie?
Reading it, it says it's a horror movie. It's not a horror movie. It's a psychological movie.
It's less horror than Midsummer, which I still think has horror elements in it.
It's foreboding doom that is coming at every corner.
There's a lot of not much happening in this movie, which kind of adds to that.
There's a lot of not much happening. It's 2 hours long, and I reckon about 70% of that is either silence or the most mundane speaking flat tone that all these characters have.
Let's give a real quick synopsis.
Oh, do I have to?
I will. And I will, like always, refuse to learn characters' names because they're irrelevant. So I will call them probably by...
If you pause, I'll tell you their names.
Okay. So I'm just going to call them by the actor name and then maybe I give them some level of respect by saying, that one. That's pretty much how I run with characters.
Yeah.
Unless they're Iron Man or Batman, I'm pretty much not learning their names. All right. So, so Colin Farrell,
Stephen,
and Nicole Kidman,
Anna,
are married.
They are,
and they have two children named
Bob
and
Kim.
5 years of podcast. This is how seamless this has become. And so they're a family. He's a successful he's a surgeon, a heart surgeon, a cardiologist. She is another type of doctor, but not quite as good.
What's the eye doctor? Glasses.
An ophthalmologist, I think.
Maybe. There we go. Yeah.
And so she's not an optometrist. She's an ophthalmologist, which is kind of better, but still
a real doctor.
You know, it's like being a feet doctor. Who cares, right? You're not really a doctor. I think is the way she's sort of treated in
the way he kind of pokes at it as well.
And so he very quickly, you see him meeting fairly consistently with a young man named
Martin.
And him and Martin have this sort of relationship where he buys him presents. You're not immediately aware of why that's the case, but you get
it's a very weird relationship. Like, he seems to be friendly with him, but also standoffish with him at the same time.
He introduces him to people in various different ways. He's a friend of his daughter, and that keeps changing. So we kind of realize something else is going on. And of course, you know, your mind immediately turns to, is he having an affair with this kid? Is this his love child? Is this, all these things are kind of going through your head. Until his first son, his son gets sick. He can't get up out of bed. And that's when Martin turns on him, right? So
it's a very quick. It's not a quick turn. It's a surprising truth dump. Like it's like, you know, this kid doesn't seem right. This kid doesn't seem right, and then all of a sudden, here's my evil master plan spewed out to you.
So it's weird because there's some supernatural elements to this.
Of course, there is. Yes.
This movie, and it doesn't really make a lot of sense as to how or why the things that you're seeing are happening on the screen. So yeah, we'll go back to the story as we go through. It's hard to say this is well acted, right? Because
it's hard because I don't. They're definitely acting because there is no personality to any of these people. They're all so flat, monotone speaking, dry, you know, matter of fact about every conversation they have. You know, you ask how the children was, oh, he's learning piano, and by the way, my daughter had her first period.
Yeah, so that's
the way they talk.
So they say weird things. So the none of the dialogue is natural sounding.
It sounds like a robot is using them to talk, or a puppet master is using them to talk.
With a really shallow understanding of how humans relate to each other. None of them relate to each other, and so then you get a really stilted performance. That's by design, I should say. It's not bunch of bad actors.
But it's like that Futurama episode where the aliens get stuck to the side of their head.
Yeah.
And talking through people, but it doesn't sound natural or the way humans talk.
And we do see elements of natural emotion that creep through, but that's not the norm. So it's by design. So it's really off-putting early on. So you get this immediate sense of kind of what is going on here. And as you said, there are elements of what they say, the dialogue, that is very strange and not natural sounding. So you've got that coupled with really crisp, white, clinical lines of all the sets. It's either at a hospital or the house. And the house is very clean and crisp and modern, as is the hospital. And so you don't really get any kind of the foreboding was immediate for me, and it was straight from the way it was acted. And it's just like I'm peeking in on something I don't really understand.
But even super early on with the sex scene between him and between Colin Farrell and Nicole Kidman, where she acts like a lifeless body under anesthesia, and he kind of comes in, and that's the way they communicate. The way they communicate is weird and off-putting because that's not how people in love or people in a relationship talk to each other.
It's like it was written by someone who doesn't understand dialogue. Like it's Birdemic level kind of dialogue, and so
it's not bad dialogue.
No, it's just it's odd. It's delivered. Odd. And so everything's odd. So you're watching almost like I reckon the feeling I got was like this was put together by a supercomputer who'd pieced together all different movies and went, this, here's a human movie for you to watch. And so it's just everyone's kind of just 10% off. So it's slowly delivered, and the dialogue is really slow and stilted, and they just tumble out important points or things that you wouldn't normally talk about just come out as normal dialogue. So it's really quite disconcerting.
It's almost like they're rude in a way. Like the, some of the stuff they say to each other, like the way Nicole Kidman's character talks to another, his anesthesiologist. She's like, "You have a surgery tomorrow. Go home and get some sleep." Like no one talks like that. Like it's just the way it's delivered is really off-putting.
And I think the first time that really becomes apparent is the walking and talking scene between him and his friend, the anesthesiologist.
Oh yeah,
they're talking about a watch.
It's so bizarre. Like, you're like, what am I watching?
I bought a. I've got a watch. I had a watch for a number of years, and I think I don't like this watch. And now I might get a new watch.
How many meters underwater does it go? Like that's what they were talking about.
And he's just like, oh, I bought a watch recently, and it was not. That's even too much. That's too much excitement. I bought a watch recently. I bought it at my client's place. They will give a good deal for you. And he's like, oh, good. I need to buy a new watch. It's so odd.
And
you're watching. I think Academy Award winner, nominee, Colin Farrell, just deliver. Well,
that's what I mean. Like you expect, and he's using his normal Irish accent as well. So you're like, and it's so weird to hear him talk and not have any charismatic behavior behind him. Normally you can see that guy and he's full of, you see him in Scrubs and he's instantly likable, instantly easy to talk to. And this guy, you'd be like, he's a serial killer. This guy is a murderer. So,
everyone's giving off weird vibes. The kid, you know, the daughter is particularly weird. And Martin is very, very weird.
Very, very weird.
And Martin, I got to say, Barry McKeon, he's going to have a long storied career of playing serial killers because that dude is is just creepy.
He's creepy looking dude.
And so there's something unsettling about this kid. You then get a scene where he brings Martin to his house. And so he's suddenly then interacting with the daughter and the son. And there's some really odd dialogue, but you can understand that the daughter who's 14 is immediately kind of hooked on this guy who's 16. Yeah.
And he's got, you know, he takes it. Then the son, Bob, asks about, do you have underarm hair.
Hair under your arms, yeah. And says, I've got some.
And then he's like, Bob asks, can I see it?
Yeah.
And he pulls his shirt off and shows him, and obviously this makes the girl, the daughter, more smitten.
And then he says something like, well, my dad's three times as hairy as you are. And like, so then when he turns up, Martin turns up at the hospital again, and that clearly to the frustration of Colin Farrell, you've turned up again. And does a full check on him and then asks to see Colin Farrell's underarm hair, which he obliges. It's all so weird.
You can see Colin Farrell's mind ticking in that moment. Like, this kid is bugging the crap out of me, but I've kind of made a commitment here.
Yeah.
It's weird. I shouldn't be doing this, but I'm going to do it anyway.
He buys a Rolex for him.
Is it a Rolex? Or is it
I think it's a Rolex, and he buys a very expensive watch. Spends more money on the metal band because it lasts longer, which is another point of whole conversation. And then he swaps that out anyway. He doesn't like
it. Yeah, he was mad about that. He was super
mad. Mad about that. So there's he keeps giving him money and presents and stuff. He invites him to dinner, which is a key point, and he makes the time. He's not telling Nicole Kidman at this stage what's going on, right?
He's weirdly avoiding telling Nicole Kidman about spending time with this kid, which makes it more mysterious.
Yeah. So you kind of like, well, why are you hiding that from your wife?
Yeah.
And so he goes and the mother, played by Alicia Silverstone, he kind of demands that he sits and watches his favorite movie, which is Groundhog Day.
Yep.
Three quarters away, he just gets up and says, I'm tired, I'm going to bed, and just goes to bed, Martin. Sure. So he's left with his mum, who kind of immediately makes a move talking about how smooth his hands are.
So creepy, dude. So creepy.
She starts kissing and licking and sucking his fingers. He excuses himself and leaves. So you completely kind of on edge at this point. Like there's something.
But it's not like, get off me, I'm married. It's he kind of stands up and kind of awkwardly pulls his finger away. He's like, I have to go now. Sorry. It's like a weird British guy apologizing. I'm so sorry. I need to leave now.
Yeah, and so then we get to, after a number of weird scenes, we get to the kicker, which is where Bob can't get out of bed, physically can't move. Yeah. Is taken to hospital. They run a battery of tests. They say he's fine. He starts to walk out of the hospital and then collapses with Nicole Kidman there. He's rushed back into hospital. He then starts refusing food. So he actually physically can eat, but he won't let himself eat. Right, yeah. And then we get the warning from Martin. So we find out very quickly that expedition dump that you were talking about is just a whole dump of information about he says at that stage he killed his father.
Yeah, so it's like you killed my father, so now you have to choose.
Yeah, that's not the same. You killed one of my family, so now you have to choose who you're going to kill. Mm. That is not the same, Martin. The correct thing to do in that situation would be, you killed my father, I'm going to kill your son, or I'm going to kill your daughter, yeah, or I'm going to kill your father. Like, eye for an eye, I'm going to do the killing. Not you. He didn't force you in some sort of jigsaw style trap to kill one of your family. Like, I don't think that's fair, Martin. I'm all for eye for an eye. I subscribe to that.
Yeah. But like, he's like, you have to choose, and they're going to start, like, paralysis is the first step, not eating is the second step. Third step is bleeding from the eyes, and then fourth step is death. So yeah, you have to choose to kill one of them, or they're all going to die.
And I think it's once the eyes start bleeding, there's basically 24 hours left. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, like, you got to shoot now.
And he just, as calmly and as easily as every other dialogue, you know, stilted dialogue comes out, he just goes through this with a kind of nervous twitch that character's got. But other than that, it's just delivered very frankly about it. And yeah, so it's
super weird.
He doesn't believe him at first, but it starts happening, and the daughter.
Well, he just escorts him out of the hospital. Like, he's just like, you're out you go.
But it actually comes true. The daughter starts getting sick. Yeah. But there's a long period between the daughter being sick and anything happening to Nicole Kidman at all.
No, nothing
happens to her at all. We don't see her.
But Bob continues to get sick.
Bob goes down, but he says that they're all going to get sick and you will then have to choose. And now don't see anything happen to Nicole Kidman at all. And she kind of takes over caring for them, and he's kind of off doing his own thing. She also starts playing detective and trying to find out what's going on and how they're all connected and what's happening. So she starts looking into Martin and that whole thing. So I guess before we get to the end, how is Martin doing this? Do you have any idea?
I would guess obviously it's supernatural, because there's no way he could possibly make this happen with the access he had to these people. So I'm guessing it's something along the lines of he sold his soul to the devil, something along those lines, where he basically, no matter what happens, he has to choose, or these three people are going to die. No matter what happens to him, he can get killed. The deal is, Stephen needs to decide what happens to these.
Is it a tortured man eventually, you know, trying to pay restitution to the universe, or is this really happening? Like, that's the thing that I was struggling with, is are we actually watching a story unfold and being told by a kind of reliable narration, or
I think there's too much like, I thought the same thing. I thought, you know, it's all in his head, but there's too much communication between Martin and everyone else. I was under the understanding, you know, that maybe it's all in his head as well, and Martin wasn't even real, and he's giving back to the universe after a mental breakdown or something. But there's too much connection between Martin and everyone else. You know, they say that they've seen him hanging out by the car, and you know, there's too much there.
So you don't really ever get an understanding of how Martin's able to do this, but he's certainly influencing this.
I come to the conclusion that it's some sort of psychological deal that he's made, like a dark, basically deal with the devil. I feel like he sold his soul for this to happen. Is how I walked out of it thinking.
And so both kids are sick.
Mm-hmm.
He him and his wife's relationship is deteriorating greatly. She's trying to investigate how and why this is happening. They have a really tense scene talking about she makes him food and he talks about mashed potatoes. There's a scene about mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
And she breaks down and is effectively saying the kids are sick. They're in there. They're dying. And you're worried about mashed potatoes and what we should cook tomorrow. He flips out so that you get some real anger and aggression in that scene. Mm. She doesn't react a lot to what he's doing either. Like he starts smashing plates and throwing stuff around. She doesn't react a huge amount to that.
Yeah.
And so you get this kind of.
Well, you get to the point where he's like, what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
I either have to kill the kids.
Yeah, I think I'm going to pick one.
I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to go at my life as normal. What do you want me to do? And then it kind of cuts to the bedroom and they're having a normal conversation again. It's the first real emotional scene that you get from him.
And he cracks and he goes and gets the Bobby Cairn character. He goes and grabs Martin,
yes.
And locks him up in the basement.
But we also must preface that Martin's father was killed on the table when Stephen was doing surgery. Now, the revelations throughout the movie is that Stephen was a drunk, an alcoholic, who had two drinks prior to Martin's dad's surgery. So he claims that he made no mistake and he wasn't the reason why he died.
Yeah.
But having two drinks and doing heart surgery probably isn't the best idea.
And in his view, an anesthesiologist can kill a patient, but a heart surgeon could never kill anyone.
Yes.
And then when she talks to the anesthesiologist friend, he says, oh, a heart surgeon can kill anyone. An anesthesiologist never. And so there's this juxtaposition between the two of them. She also gives a very unenthusiastic hand job to get that information.
It's such a sexual movie for being unsexy at all.
It's the least sexy movie you could imagine.
Like, but there's so much sex in it. Not so much sex in it, but there's so much sex going on in this movie. Like, he's having sex with Nicole Kidman. Like, Nicole Kidman's basically in her underwear for a good couple of minutes, laying on a bed, not motionless. The daughter...
To the point where she's pretending to be anesthetized.
Yes. Yes. So she... But then the daughter strips down to her underwear. Mind you, very creepy. She's 14 in this movie.
Yes.
Actually a 14-year-old actress.
Yeah.
And he's 24. Barry, yes. That's super creepy.
Yep.
And then the really unenthusiastic handjob is
to his friend who says, what do I get out of this? And she says, I'll give you what you wanted what you nearly got at the barbecue, which is
what
another scene
there.
Yeah, I don't remember that scene, but there must have been a lingering look or something. But then again, a completely like no friend gathering you've ever seen. It's like these people are absolute strangers the way that they talk to each other.
And then he's like, when do I get to have this? And she's like, right now. And then it cuts to the scene where they're in the car talking about the scene and she's giving as Shannon described, the most unenthusiastic version of it till she gets the information. It's just so bizarre. Like no one talks like that. Is that an affair that's been going on for a long time? Is this the very first time they've done this?
No, I think it's the first time. And clearly he's wanted it for a while, but she's never given in.
Yeah.
And she's only doing it to get information about what's going on. And so then the movie kind of flips then at this stage. So once all that information's on the table, he's got Martin in a basement and he's kind of like tempted to just kill him.
Yep.
And he says, well, if you kill me, all three of them die. So the power rests with me being alive.
Yep.
And so he decides not to kill him at that stage. The kids and Nicole Kidman visit him and she kisses him on the feet.
I didn't understand that at all. What the hell is going on in this movie?
And so she's visiting Martin, the prisoner, and kisses his feet, but there's not a huge amount of dialogue, I think, in that scene.
Before all this happens, she goes to Martin and basically says, if my husband was the problem.
That's right.
Punish him. Why are you punishing us? And he's basically said, well, that's not how it works. I've decided this is the most fair way.
Yes. So she goes and pleads her case. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's, again, her pleading her case by kissing his feet and letting him go. By doing that, she's kind of like pleading her case again to try and save her family and kill Martin instead. Kill Stephen instead.
Stephen. So then you get the last part where they realize that he's going to have to choose one of them.
Yeah. And I love how the children just start bargaining between themselves. Like, yep. Oh, well, they bought me a piano. They didn't buy you a piano, so you're gone.
Yeah, so they basically chide each other and say, well, he's going to pick me. And then they all start sucking up. So yep. You see the kids really transparently start, you know, talking about. So early on, Bob talks about, I think he wants to be an ophthalmologist like his mum.
Yeah.
He turns that around and says, oh, I've changed my mind. I actually want to be a cardiologist.
And he told him to get a haircut and he cut his hair.
So he's cut his own hair. So he tries to, he's literally can't move. He can't move his legs, but he's crawling, like commando crawling, goes, I'm about to go and water the plants.
Yeah, I can't walk.
That's my job. He can't walk, but he says, no, I've done that.
And these are outdoor plants, like they're spraying.
Yeah, these are outdoor plants. There's a running thing about the kids are supposed to walk the dog, and so the kids don't do that. And so there's now all of a sudden being really super good kids that are trying to impress their dad.
I love how cold Kim is. She's like, you know, I've lost my iPad, well, my iPod, basically. When you die, can I have yours?
Yeah.
And it's not how people... normal people would talk to each other.
She lost her she calls it an MP3 player, yes. Which again is not how kids talk.
No.
And she says she's lost like 3 this week or something.
She lost her first one, then the one Martin gave her, and now she's lost 2 essentially.
So there's this really what's keeps happening to those MP3 players, particularly when she can't move around a lot.
Yeah,
the kids never really get disciplined except for when Nicole Kidman takes her phone away in the hospital
and smacks her in the face.
Yeah, and after she calls her a bitch or tells her to fuck off, I think she tells her to fuck off.
Yeah.
So there's this weird, everything is weird. Every relationship in here does not act like a normal father son, father daughter. Brother and sister, husband and wife, mum and like none of that makes any sense. The friends don't make sense. The kids' relationships don't make sense.
Before he chooses, he goes to the school principal
and says,
basically, who's better at what? Like, yeah. You know, and then he's like, yeah, well, Bob's really good at math and science, but Kim's really good at literature and something.
Yeah, and English and art and something.
Yeah, like and that. It's like how they behaved at school. Yeah, he's like, yeah, they're pretty good. Both of them are pretty good. We haven't had a problem with either of them. And he's like, out of the two of them, who would you choose?
Yeah, yeah. And he's just like, I don't know how to answer that.
Yeah, he's
like
but, he's not shocked at the question either.
No.
Like no one's surprised by this weird shit that comes out of their mouth.
He's mildly confused is probably the way you would respond. And so he's struggling with this, I've got to make a choice.
Yeah.
That last part. Where how he decides. This kind of he comes into the room. He says to the Nicole Kidman character, "It's time, effectively," and she's straightening the bed.
Yeah.
Were you prepared for that? For that scene?
No. I had no idea. I kind of thought he was leaning towards killing her. That's the way I kind of interpret it. You know, the kids were both good kids, relatively speaking. You know, they both were trying to do better. She was kind of the odd one who didn't gel with him the best. Yeah. I felt she was kind of at odds with him. So I felt like, you know, she was the one who was going to get taken out. I thought he was going to march her down to slay her. But the way he kind of did it was to tie them all up, put a bag on their head, then spin around with a gun and fire randomly.
Yeah, wildly inefficient. And really could have resulted in the most painful death to any of them. Like if he'd shot, I wanted to know what happens if he'd shot one of them, but didn't kill them. Is that
just shot him in the leg, like just
wounded them. If this is like, oh, you shot me in the leg, is that the choice of that person? Like, did he just shoot them until they die?
I wondered that because even when he was spinning around, the first shot missed. Like he opened his eyes and see if he shot someone, and then he's like, oh, I was close to that person. I thought then he'd fire that person, but
so he nearly shot Nicole. Kidman.
Nearly shot Nicole Kidman, and then he nearly shot the door, didn't he? I think
the second one was just like completely nothing.
I thought he hit the lamp over her head. Was that like the first shot?
The first shot was pretty close to Nicole Kidman.
Okay, and then he just kept spinning around, and then he eventually shoots. Spoilers: we're going to spoil the movie, but it's from 2017, so whatever. Yeah. He shot Bob. the youngest.
Yeah, son. Which is a beautiful shot. Like the shot of just the bag, or just the blood soaking through the clothes, and the head just kind of with a bag on it, but slowly kind of just drifting away, and it holds that shot for a really long time, and you're really the emotion of that of that shot's massive.
I watched that spinning scene twice, though. I went back and watched it again.
Yeah.
The way he stops and shoots is a bit like, let's do another take of that, please, because you're obviously stopping when I tell you to stop.
Yeah.
Let's do another take, Colin Farrell. But anyway.
So he shoots Bob.
Yep.
And seemingly, curse lifted, like he's actually done what he said he was going to do. And if you kill one of those three, you get to live. Is the daughter still obsessed with Martin?
Well, there's the very last scene is them, three of them, eating in a diner.
Obviously, the same diner that he used to meet Martin at.
And he's obviously their appetite's back, because she is covering her French fries with sauce. Mm-hmm. And there's no wheelchair, so you assume that she walked there.
Yeah. They walk out. You see them all three.
At that point, and then all of them stand up when Martin comes in to get a drink. And walk out, and they walk into like a blinding light kind of thing. And Martin sits there in the darkness, kind of watching them. So I interpret that as, he's now cursed for life because he sold his soul, and they're kind of released from the curse. I did like the rationale between who you should kill.
Yeah.
We can have another child, because we're both of the age, so let's kill a child. Like, it's just, there's no empathy in anyone's voice or actions. There's no concern for feelings or emotions. It's all just so, here are the facts, let's do it.
If it was a normally acted movie, if it was just everyone acting normally, but that choice had to be made. Is it a better movie or a worse movie
You get Sophie's Choice, don't you? That's kind of the way it comes down to. You get Sophie's Choice with a heap of emotion, and she has to choose her favorite child. So I think that's probably what they were trying to differentiate themselves from.
But you don't get that complete fear of and foreboding that you get through watching this weirdly acted.
I think having to choose between a member of your family is messed up, no matter how you act it. But to add the way they act around each other adds a whole different vibe to the movie. And I think you either dig it the way you do, or you find it completely boring and get to the point like I did. And I think they're your two options. I think it's such a divisive movie.
It's not for everyone, right? It's absolutely not for everyone. But I'm sick of seeing the same old stuff, right? Like,
well, this is definitely different, that's for sure.
Because this is more of an art film. These are artistic choices that have been made by the cast and by the director. And I get it's like, it would be like you've shown too much emotion. Like, I can see that in between takes, be like, no, take it down.
Yeah, you need 20%. I can see those conversations happening,
because you'd be fighting your own. Your own training as an actor, to be like,
as a human being,
don't show emotion, don't do anything here. You really don't see a huge amount of emotion. There's a bit of anger in the scene where he's smashing plates and cutlery and stuff.
Well, you really only see emotion a few times, where she slaps the child, where the child swears at Nicole Kidman, where he smashes the plates, and only that very last moment where he tries to put the cover over Bob's head. And kind of wiggles away. But there's no crying. There's no, daddy, don't, please don't do this. There's none of that stuff. It's just, this is what we have to do now.
That last scene is horrific for that reason. There's no crying.
It's quiet.
It's so quiet. And so in a normal setting there, it would be, please don't do this.
Yeah.
You would have sobbing. There's nothing. And it makes it even more eerie and haunting in that scene. I held my breath. Like, I could feel myself holding my breath through that whole scene, because you genuinely didn't know what he was going to do. And when you realize what he's about to do, he is leaving it to chance. He's just going to blindly shoot until he hits someone.
But imagine being under the cloth when that's happening. Like, you hear two shots and then you hear a third, and then silence again, and then no reload. You're like, have I survived? Am I right now?
Who did you hit? I can't feel anything.
Yeah, who did you hit? Like, it's just like, it's completely terrifying, but it takes you a little bit out of the movie with the lack of emotion, because you got to kind of look at it as an alien off-world planet, because you can't look at it any other way.
It's an art piece. It's not, I don't think it's not there to be a showcase for the acting.
No.
It's not there. It's not there to be a show. Like, you'd almost say the direction was boring.
Oh,
there's not a huge, amount of camera movement. There's not a huge, some of the shots are interesting in their placement in the camera.
Some of the placement, like one above the stairs where he falls.
Yeah.
After coming in the escalator. That's interesting.
But a lot of it's locked. There's not a lot of camera movement. No. They're not following characters around. They're locked off, or they're just, you know, everything's static. Their acting is quite static.
Even everything, the walking and talking scenes, they're in a location. They walk away from the camera or towards the camera.
Yeah. So this is more like, to me, it's a bit of a moving painting. Like it was such an artistic movie. They're all choices that are made starkly white. Like it's almost void entirely of color.
You can also picture like a book that's been illustrated that's slowly been animated to life.
Yeah.
Like the words on the page are kind of jumping off at you, and the way you describe, like, I picture it as the way you describe things, like, you know, exterior, hospital, nighttime, and it's just kind of done to the nth degree of that's what they're ticking off.
Yeah, it's like reading a script.
Yeah, it's what it feels like.
With nothing's colored in. Everything's
there's
just
no emotion. It's just, this is what's happening.
Yeah.
And like, it's like there's no extra stage direction that the characters would normally take.
There's no direction. Like it's just like this again.
Yeah, it's like you're a charismatic surgeon, you're a surgeon. But I'm not going to tell you how to act. That you just don't do anything else.
Yeah. So that would be a really hard shoot for particularly those very talented actors in the cast. So it makes very good.
That's what I mean. Does it make it a good performance? Because they're going against their natural way of doing things. Like even being a terrible person, that's an artistic choice. But to be a nothing person with no personality, that takes some acting, I feel.
Going through horrific things. Like he's watching his children slowly die.
And he asks for mashed potatoes. Like that's...
Yeah. Yeah. So he's detached from reality a bit as well. And he just thinks that the hospital should fix it. He has a really aggressive, well, not aggressive, but he calls the head of the hospital a loser.
Yeah.
Like they decide to take the kids home. And he's like, I think you've failed. Like that makes you a loser, doesn't it?
If I ran this hospital, I'd be a loser or something.
And the hospital director's like, okay. And then he wanders inside.
And he's like, see you later, Anne. Bye.
Yeah. Is it worth seeing? I guess I think it's fascinating. I can't
recommend it to someone. Like I can't sit there and go, okay, it's fascinating. It's interesting. Is it entertaining? Did you enjoy watching it?
I did. I really enjoyed watching it. I would strongly recommend it for people who love something a bit different to watch this unfold in a really hauntingly kind of starkly beautiful kind of way.
But it's interesting the fact that you know the outcome. He has to choose. They're your options. And yet you spend probably, what, three quarters of the movie denying this and just watching it unfold, like he's being completely oblivious to what's been said.
Well, yeah, I mean, and Martin's been right all the way through. So Martin, you kind of go, nah, there's no way this is happening. If the daughter didn't get sick, you'd probably just go, he's messing with him. Like, and then she gets sick, and then you're going, is this psychosomatic? Is this something that he's managed to talk them into? Are they kind of screwed the parents over, particularly when she's really into him? And I don't understand why he decides to do that. He's kind of like, well, I'm going to alienate her against the family.
Mm. But would it have been more interesting if there wasn't a supernatural element and the kid was like a super genius?
No,
like a sleeping super genius and like was doing this somehow.
I didn't need it explained.
I thought it was weird.
But the whole thing's weird. If that was the only thing you'd be going, that's a plot point. Here, these are all artistic choices that have been made. And I hadn't even thought about your take on it, that he sort of sold his soul that this was happening. It, I like these movies that aren't like, I'm not going to tell you how this is happening. It's just happening.
I just assumed that's what it was. Like, I was like, well, he's obviously sold his soul to the devil, or he's made a deal with the darkness, or whatever religion you want to believe in. He's done something dark to cause pain, and he's now cursed or whatever.
Why would his mum want to bang the surgeon who killed her husband?
Colin Farrell's a good-looking dude with good-looking
hands. He is. And it was really nice to see Alicia Silverstone, because she doesn't, A, turn up in art house movies at all. But I love that there was a theory, like he's seen Batman and Robin, and he's gone, yes, that's exactly the chick who cannot...
every single person from Batman and Robin, from Batman.
But I was sitting there going, like, he saw Batman and Robin, she's like, he's watched Alicia Silverstone performance and gone, she can deliver dialogue with no inflections whatsoever. She is perfect for this role.
She's perfect for the role. Yeah.
Like,
It's kind of scary how they're all got, I mean, mind you, everyone has linked to Marvel movies or superhero movies, but all four of the main cast have are all in a Batman movie.
Yeah. They've all been in a Batman movie, which is very strange.
Yes.
Alicia Silverstone, I was like, oh, she's here. And I'm like, yeah, she's not a very good actress. I get it.
Yeah. I understand why she's not in more.
I'm like, is Kristen Stewart not doing anything? Could you not play the wife? Like, you just get the most wooden actresses and actors in. And then, and like, great performance. Yeah. You know,
nah, she's too young. She's too young, Kristen Stewart.
I loved it. I think it's a fascinating look. I don't know what the message is. Like, I don't.
No, there's no message. There's no point to this movie. You don't go away thinking, oh, that could happen in the real world, rah, rah, rah. It's not something you think about. I mean, the only thing, the interesting tale that you took away from it is it this man tormenting himself and projecting onto Martin? Like, Martin's just a normal, weird dude. And maybe he didn't say any of this stuff. But I don't know. There, you can interpret it a few different ways, I think. But
well, he's a doctor, so he could potentially be drugging
his family,
the kids. He could be doing that.
Yeah.
She could. Nicole Kidman could also be doing that.
Yeah.
They also have close ties to an anesthesiologist.
I don't think it's either though. It has to be. It has to be Stephen, because Nicole Kidman didn't know about Martin or know that he was drinking. So he didn't. She didn't think that. She probably wouldn't have even known that he lost someone on the table.
Yeah.
Like, it just wouldn't be talked about. Like, yeah, as a surgeon, do you go, oh, you know, how was surgery today? Oh, you know, I lost two people. I don't think
that's I'm sure there would be those conversations, but it's far more for the course. I mean, you're doing risky heart surgery on people. You're going to lose patients.
Yeah, of course.
Like, that's going to happen. And so it came out that he was drinking and how that actually affected it, it's never articulated. No. You know that all you know is he had two drinks. Did that have any bearing on the result?
But no one says it was his fault. Like, even they said, you know, it could have been his fault, but I don't think anyone actually says that was the reason why he lost that patient.
Yeah. So everything's a little bit up in the air. So Martin's taking this vengeance out, but he spends a long time just being pally with him.
Yeah.
He spends a long time just showing up, six months,
he said.
Yeah, getting gifts, hanging out. And then
he said it was two years since he lost his father. And then he said, and then Colin Farrell says they've been hanging out for 6 months.
Hmm.
But it seems like a lot longer than that.
Yeah. And he's buying him stuff. They're hanging out. They're being friendly. Hmm. And then all of a sudden this happens. Just out of the blue, Bob gets sick. So I think it's a fascinating movie. I would encourage people to see it.
I can't recommend people watch it. I don't think it's very good. Very good's harsh. I wish I hadn't seen it.
It's probably goes back to why people watch movies. I'm deeply invested in the art of movies.
Oh, it's beautifully artistic. I watch a movie to be entertained, and this didn't entertain me. I wasn't, the anticipation wasn't as much as I think you had. Like, the foreboding wasn't as interesting as I think you found it. I really wanted to hurry up and get to the point. I think 2 hours is too long for a movie like this.
I didn't think it felt 2 hours. I was gripped. But I would watch it. Killing a Sacred Deer, available on Stan right now.
You've been warned. I guess you've been informed and warned, I guess is the way to say it.
You've been
wind formed.
Right, let's get on to Doctor Strange. You'll do a fancy little doovie in the middle.
Doctor Strange.
Spells and stuff.
Witty quip by Wong. Yeah.
That's okay, see, we don't even need it. We do our own editing here.
Yeah. One giant take.
We're not going to go into the plot because it's been like a month since we've actually seen it.
Yeah.
So it's hard for us to sit and talk.
And I will say this, but I'm going to release this pretty quickly after this is aired because we're professionals. We haven't made any mistakes yet. But we've both been relatively sick. Like we were pretty run down, basically straight after Doctor Strange aired.
Yeah.
You got COVID and
I have not had COVID. I want
to. Sorry. You are immune to COVID, but got hit by this mystery illness. So I was sick also before that. So we've both been run down fairly heavily. So it's not like we didn't want to record, just we haven't really had a chance to do it.
Not that they know, because that comes out and people just think,
well, they don't care, but
magic. For the three people we're talking to, if you do care. Hi, nice that you care about our health rather than the content we provide.
Yeah.
It's just, if you're sitting there tapping your watch going, come, boy, you've got slack.
I don't think anyone's doing that somehow.
I nearly died.
You were bedridden. Let's settle down.
I was bedridden with death.
Yeah, there was tubes coming out of him. There was monitors everywhere.
But I'm okay now. So, yeah,
Doctor Strange.
We went to the movies to see it, which is a nice pleasurable thing to do in these modern times, that we can actually go together to a movie, which is really nice to do. So I think anything that we see together kind of immediately has a reverence that we look back, and I appreciate the whole kind of vibe of going to the movies together.
Yep.
So I say that because I will look back at it and go, that was better than what it was, purely for the experience.
The experience, rather than seeing it on TV, going.
Yeah, but I really do love going to the cinema, particularly when it's a movie that you're anticipating. Mm-hmm. It must be said of the Marvel, of where we're at with the Marvel MCU, Doctor Strange is about the only character that I got genuinely excited for. That and Spider-Man are probably the two that I'll genuinely get excited for.
Yep.
I can't imagine another character that's really going to suck me in to that, and I don't even know why Doctor Strange. I think it just hits some elements.
Do you know what it is? It's because it's one of the last real remaining Phase 2 and Phase 3 movies that you actually genuinely care about. Because, I mean, realistically, look back at the Marvel movies. Iron Man, Captain America are both gone from the spoilers. They're both gone. They're your two characters that kind of led every other movie that you actually cared about. Ant-Man? Sure, it's fine, but you don't care about Ant-Man. Doctor Strange, you care about because it's a bloody good story and it's a bloody good first movie.
Yeah, and it's a different take. There's a lot of reasons. I really like Scott Derrickson's direction of Doctor Strange, the first movie.
Yep.
The fact that the script was punched up by Dan Harmon makes me really happy. So it just does a whole bunch of Shannonisms about...
It's like
the way it is.
Just tick these boxes for you.
It was genuinely different from what we were seeing in the MCU in terms of the direction and the effects that were being utilized made it look different. It was almost our Nolan MCU movie. Like, you know, it was that real different approach.
Yes.
So it was it's the follow-up to that. Then the fact piled on that they came out and said it's going to be Marvel's first horror adjacent movie, and so I'm like, yes, sign me up.
Yeah.
Now if they said the second Black Panther movie is going to be horror, I'm like, meh. Who gives a shit, right? Yeah. But this is Doctor Strange, and then Derrickson leaves the project, and they replace him with Sam fucking Raimi, and I'm like, okay, I'm hooked. You know what they could do? You know what the only thing they could do if they said, guys, we're going to, unfortunately, Derrickson's gone. We're going to bring on Jordan Peele. Jordan Peele, come and do it. Like, I would lose my mind, like, at that stage. You know what I mean? So they made this movie for me, almost. Like, they put all of my
on paper.
Yeah, they put all this stuff in for me.
Yeah.
And there was certainly, when it hit those points, it fucking hit them. Like, it hit. It got some of those really interesting horror kind of concepts, and the multiverse stuff they did really well. Everything that's wrapped around it is kind of meh, right? It's not bad. it's just kind of meh. Is that
the problem with the multiverse? Soon as you start dealing with multiverse and you don't have canon behind it like you did in Spider-Man, it lacks a certain punch. Like going to these other multiverses like Earth 115972, whatever the hell they want to call themselves, and going to this place where you've got some fan service that's not real fan service.
Comic book fan service.
Yeah, it's not real fan service. And you have probably the worst villain that I could think of for this movie.
Do you think?
I really don't like the Scarlet Witch as a character.
Whoa.
Because she's so overpowered that she could have taken out Thanos single-handedly. They got to find ways to neutralize her when they do anything that involves her. And it even showed that the only way that she could... Spoilers. The only way she could be defeated by anyone was to defeat herself.
But I see. I thought that I think taking a fan favorite, and I would say WandaVision has been the most successful.
I disagree.
Or the most well liked or best reviewed of the.
I disagree adults. Again, but. It's in the top.
I'm talking in terms of the reception of it. Are you saying there's others that were better?
Loki was better, and I think better received.
No, but as in more widely received. It kicked something off. It was
definitely unique. It was the most unique television show I'd seen for a long time, and it happened to be an MCU property.
Of a character that had four movies,
let's say,
of being a hero.
Yes. Oh no. And the first movie, she was a villain turned hero.
Yeah, but you know, it was pretty quick turn.
Yeah.
And then a whole TV show where she's kind of the villain.
She is the villain.
Yeah. She is the villain, but she's still very likable.
Spoilers for WandaVision, but yeah, she's the villain, but she's definitely the portrayed to be the hero, but she's actually the villain.
And so I went in on this cold. So I didn't know she was the villain of the movie. And so that scene which I'd seen in the trailers about going and asking her for help, I'm like, okay, she's in this movie and she's going to help Doctor Strange. I really genuinely didn't know that was going to happen.
No, see, I knew that already.
Yeah, I deliberately stayed away from everything. So that and then the big set piece in the middle that was genuinely like, I was like, oh shit. Like I hadn't picked that. And then to watch that scene play out was infinitely the best part of the movie for me. Like
we're talking about the scene with Patrick Stewart.
With all that whole scene and then how quickly that goes south.
Oh yeah. Fuck, that's good. That was a good scene.
And brutally south for a Marvel movie. Like, you know, you're not going to get pure horror elements. Like you're not going to get pure horror or pure gore in a Marvel movie. But that is as close as you're ever going
to
get.
It's super close to being, you know, disturbing almost. It's not recommended for young viewers at all.
And it's brutal in that part. And so that was the far and away the best part of the movie.
I could show my kids Iron Man, Captain America, and be pretty happy that they're not going to have nightmares. There's no way in hell I'm showing them this movie for a long time.
So it did when it was able to turn and be a horror movie or thereabouts, it was good. Like it hit its straps and there was fan service in there, but I was like, oh shit. Like I wasn't expecting that at all.
Well, you rock up and these, you know, the Illuminati, these heroes among mere mortals, you know, heroes that are above other heroes. Like, you know, this is the council of heroes that are the best of the best. And you bring in, you know, you bring in the Fantastic Four, Reed Richards, played by John Krasinski. And, you know, Patrick Stewart comes back. You got Black Bolt, which doesn't make a lot of sense. Captain Marvel, but a different version. The Sorcerer Supreme from that universe. And the way Wanda dispatched... And Captain Marvel. Yeah. Captain Carter. The way she dispatches those people who normally would not have a problem with anyone.
Yeah.
And, you know, Thanos... They even eliminated Thanos by... murdering him, not by snapping his fingers or by taking the Infinity Stones, by straight up brute force and killing him. they shouldn't have a problem with this little tiny.
They also killed that Doctor Strange.
Yeah. 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 And, you know, you've got a lady who's got some magic powers, and she comes in and they underestimate her completely and destroy her. She destroys the whole team. And it's dark. It's not very bloody, but it's dark. Like, it's no shits given, no remorse.
Yeah, it is relatively graphic in terms of the kills too. Yeah. These are fan-loved characters, you know, icons of the screen.
Yeah.
Being dispatched completely and utterly brutally. You know, and it's the first movie where we've seen the Fox pay off with both X-Men and Fantastic Four just in the universe. So there's the excitement of that is dispelled very quickly by what happens. So there is, I think that is a genius moment in that movie, and it's got Raimi's fingerprints all over it.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of the shots are Sam Raimi to a T. Yeah.
And her walking in covered in what looks like blood. It's not. It's actually oil from the from the Ultron bots.
Mm.
So it looks like she's covered in blood.
And yeah, it's very carry at that stage.
That's their getaway. That's their get around. It's not blood. It's oil. It looks dark and creepy, and the chaos magic looks sinister. Mm. And he's done such a good job at capturing the sinister darkness of it. Like that book that she has is so evil, and it will change your mind. And her whole mission is to get back to a universe where she can be with her kids.
Yeah.
And that is so driving to her that she will eliminate anyone who stands in her way.
Yeah, she's lost everything else. So that's all she cares about. So she's seeing a link into another universe. But to do that, she has to go into that universe and then effectively kill the Wanda that's in that universe to take over. So she's just gonna do that. So she attacks the sacred temple that they're all at. That all of the sorcerers are in, all the Doctor Strange.
Yep.
So she attacks that and brutally just murders everyone there.
Because she wants a new superhero that they've introduced, America Chavez, who can basically... Is America Chavez? So basically who can create portals between universes, which no one else has ever been able to do. So basically she can open a portal and they can jump through it and they can go to a new universe or new dimension. So Wanda wants this power... to absorb this power or use America to go to a place where her children exist and she can take over.
Yeah, and I think that was the greatest shame. I think that's where the movie lost its way, was the exploration of other universes. That could have been the brevity in between the horror and the gore. You know, it could have been far funnier than a Bruce Campbell
I hated that cameo. I hated that.
I thought that was just really bad use of Bruce Campbell.
It was lame and on the nose and
So that was a shame, and I think we could have seen some much weirder, better universes that would have actually been interesting visually to look at, rather than, hey, they're a bit more advanced than us, which is effectively what we got.
Yeah, the dark universe with the dark Doctor Strange with the guy with the weird eye on his face. That was interesting, and that battle between them with the music notes was really cool. Yeah.
It was visually interesting.
Yeah, very different to everything we've seen before that.
And then he realizes, in order to do anything, he's got to go back into a body, and his body's dead.
Yeah.
So he reanimates that body, and so the last battle or the last thing with Doctor Strange is basically zombie Doctor Strange, which is also pretty gory for a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
We get a good set piece with the massive tentacle eye monster thing crashing the wedding, which I just wish would shut up about the wedding. I don't give a shit.
Who really gives a shit about fucking the nurse?
Yeah, and no one cares about Rachel McAdams.
No one cares about her.
Move on. Like, the movie gives that way too much time.
Yeah, there's some interesting things there, which we probably don't need to go into, but, like, you know, The doctor friend Nick, I want to say his name is, he knew the events of what happened on Titan. So it's become well known that Doctor Strange gave up the Infinity Stone and cost everyone the blip. And he kind of asked him, did you do the right thing?
Yeah.
And it's well known that those events have been circulated around the world.
I was very happy to see Michael Stuhlbarg back.
Yep, me too.
You know, anybody that you can get. I mean, everyone in the whole universe at some stage is contractually obligated to be in a Marvel movie. So I'm just waiting. It's like jury duty. You wait for your call up.
Yeah.
And you get caught up and you have to be in one. But
they've got a long list. They're just scratching people off a list now.
Seriously, it's just about every actor. And we get another one at the end of that movie where Charlize Theron turns up and you're like, wow, I forgot she hadn't been in one. So we got to give her a cameo
or something. Yep.
So she'll be in the next one.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the more time I'm away from it, I like it more. Mm. But I'll have to see it again to see if that's kind of me romanticizing it or not.
It's one of those things though. Like I'm a big sucker for popcorn movies you can rewatch over and over again. I've had the Batman on Blu-ray or whatever the digital equivalent of that is, since it's been available to purchase, and I have not watched it again. I am not going to be rushing back to this movie, yet I will happily watch Doctor Strange, the first one, because it is far more enjoyable. But I'm not sure it's a better movie than this one is.
I think technically this movie is a better movie in the way it's put together and the way it's shot. But it's got 5 years of movie making CGI.
Oh, the CGI is fine in Doctor Strange.
And a much deeper lore that comes before it. So I'm a bit worried that this is the last of the good Marvel of the MCU movies. Like, I think this might be it. And this is something wildly different. I mean, you've got Love and Thunder coming, which I won't discount Taika because I think Taika Waititi will do something interesting. But we're going towards then a female Thor, and I'm just like, nah, I'm kind of not that I've got a problem with female superheroes,
I've never really liked Thor as a character anyway.
Well, I just don't like Jane Foster as a character.
Well, Jane Foster's a bit boring as well, but the only reason why bloody Thor Ragnarok was the only good Thor movie is Thor Ragnarok, yeah?
Because it's hilarious. Because
it's hilarious and he's fighting the Hulk. Like,
yeah.
The Hulk's a big part of that movie, and so's Loki, and so's Valkyrie. But they're decent characters around Thor. Where I don't think Jane Foster was ever
and you get Jeff Goldblum in that movie, you get Korg the Rock Monster. Like,
yeah,
there's enough
Korg's in it. Like, there's enough in there to distract it. Like, it's a Thor movie, but not really. And it's like, but it's also the same thing can you say about this movie? It's not really a Doctor Strange movie. It's more of a Wonder movie.
Well, I thought it was a genius use of a character, a subversion of a character that everyone kind of likes and had followed on a journey.
Does everyone like Wonder?
Well, I think
anyone go, I like Wanda, I want to see more of her.
I think anyone that's a comic book fan goes,
oh, yeah, sure.
She's got a massive turn, but then again, I think every character's got a massive turn
at some point,
somewhere in the comic book.
They're always evil at some point.
But she's pretty well known as being A, very powerful, but
well,
B,
she,
also
she,
having
she
a pretty full turn.
Her major thing is she can basically, she has an unlimited power. She turns around and says, no more mutants. So she eliminates the X-Men effectively, which I thought was going to come in this movie. I thought that she was going to say, bring on the mutants, and then that's why the X-Men are now part of the MCU. But they didn't. They killed Wanda off. I don't think she's dead, though.
Yeah.
I think they're going to bring her back in some way because I know she's – I think she's scheduled for two more movies, I think.
I thought she was pretty good, Elizabeth Olsen. Like, she gave just enough in this.
Always fine. I don't think her acting can be said that she's good or bad. She's fine.
But I think Cumberbatch is good. He's charming enough in this.
He's always good.
You know, dry and sardonic enough that it kind of works. I mean, what's coming up in terms of the next slate of Marvel movies that we're interested in?
I mean, you're looking at Love and Thunder. You got the Ant-Man and the Quantum something.
Quantum Mania or whatever
Quantum
it's called.
Mania.
Yeah. You'll have a second Black Panther
coming. Second Black Panther with Shuri as Black Panther. I believe...
If she bothers to get vaccinated.
If she gets vaccinated. Then you've got the Marvels, which is where the TV shows are going. There's not a lot... Shang-Chi will probably get a sequel. And then you've got... Then you're kind of back... And then you've got Guardians 3. To round out 2023, I think it is. There's not a lot of big things because the problem is you've lost all your really charming, charismatic leads like Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans. You've lost those guys, and Benedict Cumberbatch, I don't feel maybe not him, but his character isn't enough to drive the MCU like Downey was.
Yeah, and so the question is, are we seeing the end of MCU? Are we just watching them? I hope so.
I think how can you bring in the X-Men and the Fantastic Four and genuinely keep a giant MCU going? It's almost impossible. There's so many X-Men. The Fantastic Four needs to have their own little entity. Even in the comic books, it makes no fucking sense. Like if you have in New York, you have Spider-Man, Black, all those people, and then something happens, they're all going to turn up. Like I think just stop.
I think and Daredevil's TV show's been re-upped. Again, which is great because I love the Daredevil, but as long as they keep the tone and Disney doesn't
as Drew Goddard's attached to it, it's fine.
Yeah, and Charlie Cox obviously coming back, which is important too. And the one I wish they'd bring back is Jessica Jones too, because I thought that was brilliant as well. And David Tennant in that was so good as the bad guy. So,
but yeah, where does Doctor Strange sit in the Multiverse of Madness? I hate the name, but anyway. Where does that sit in the MCU 30-odd movies we have now?
I reckon it's at least in the top 10 for me.
I don't think it's in the top 10.
I think it certainly has its place. I mean, the top 10 is cluttered with Avengers movies. So, you know, is it better than the first Doctor Strange? I think I enjoyed it more. Does it do more for the MCU? Probably not. Like,
yeah,
you know, so I, you know, Doctor Strange was really important in that third phase. You know, and I think history will say is we'll probably just call the MCU dead after, you know, the end of the Infinity Saga. Like that's where it's going to end, right? Like
you can connect the movies as much as you want, but no one's leaning towards a big bad guy anymore.
Unless we're going towards the Secret Wars or something like that, where there's another end game.
Which is what they are doing, and they're going to have the Skrull invasion and all that kind of stuff. That is coming, and they are planning that. It's just a rudderless ship at the moment.
You got to get there, and I think what it shows is that the casting, and I've been rewatching the old Marvel movies, you know, once a week.
Yeah.
But they nailed the casting. Chris Evans was a perfect Captain America. Hemsworth was a great, like, perfect cast as Thor. Danny Jr., you know, to anchor the whole thing. They got Spider-Man right. The casting has been phenomenal of the main people. And then the hangers-on were also good. Hiddleston's great as Loki. So they did an amazing job at casting.
Paul Rudd's great as Ant-Man. But then now you've got kind of these... You got, you know, this America Chavez who has extreme power. See, Wong's going to be a bigger character than he ever intended to be, I feel. You know, Benedict Cumberbatch and, you know, Tom Holland, and, you know, you've still got Ruffalo and you've still got Hemsworth and Pratt, but I don't think they're not in the same way of leading a franchise like Downey and Evans was. I just feel like they need to stop with the MCU tie-ins. Sure, bring characters in here and there, but maybe make them contain stories.
But you can take, like, the excitement that people get from seeing those characters interact with each other.
Yeah.
You know, that was the lead up. So that it was a couple of films and then he's popped up in here or there. And then seeing them all together, we've had that no longer is the driving force.
Yeah.
To get them all together.
When is Star-Lord eventually going to meet Tony Stark? Like, that kind of thing is gone now.
Yeah, so there's not, even if you see them, it's like, well, I'll eventually meet in some movie and who gives a shit? So I think they've got to find a different trick to pull rather than just, you might see all these people together at the same time. But you've also got
in the background at the same time, you've got the TV shows.
Yeah.
You know, now you've got Moon Knight, which is a self-contained little story, which doesn't need to attach himself to the MCU at all. You've got She-Hulk coming, which is where Ruffalo is going to return. And you've got, you know, Miss Marvel, which I could not give two shits about.
Yeah.
And they're trying to bring all these characters in, and eventually they're going to have to bring them into the MCU movies because they're going to build up a big enough fan base on the TV shows, and they're going to have to make an appearance in the movies.
Yeah, and then you had The Eternals, which I don't know how it fits all in properly, but that movie was boring as batshit.
Yep.
Shang-Chi, I just did not like. So I was a hardcore Marvel fan, but I think I'm a hardcore fan up until in Infinity Saga. And the rest I'll pick and choose what I want to watch, and I'm not really interested in how it links back in. And I think
I didn't see Eternals until it came out on Disney Plus. I watched Moon Knight from day one, and I really enjoyed Moon Knight because it's a self-contained little story that has nothing else to do with the MCU. I'll go into a little bit about Moon Knight. But what Moon Knight did was it referenced things that happened in the grander scheme of the MCU without pinpointing, you know, or name dropping Black Panther. They talked about religion and gods and stuff, and they said, you know, well, you know, religion for whatever you believe in is what you'll see in the afterlife. Therefore, in Black Panther, they see it as the purple plains where he sees his father. In Moon Knight, they see it as the Egyptian afterlife on a big boat in the middle of the desert. Like, that kind of stuff explains things that happened in the MCU, but doesn't directly point to it like fan service and go, hey, remember that? Hey, did you see that? We did that there.
It's such a fine line between the fan service and, you know, just
progressing the story.
References for the sake of references. Yeah. They've also their teasers at the end have got to get better. Like, you want to hook us into a wider story, make it better than what we got.
But did you give two shits when Charlie's Throne showed up? You're like,
I was like, what is this?
But it's not progressing the story at all. It's like, by the way, there's going to be a third Doctor Strange movie.
The shock of seeing the third eye was generally a shock.
Yeah. Even that scene where he kind of was walking along, then all of a sudden he screamed and the third eye appeared. Yeah. What the fuck does that mean? Like, who?
Yeah.
Like,
now I got to go read a bunch of shit and watch a bunch of...
Or 3 or 4 years' time when we explain what the fuck that means.
I got to go and look at a whole bunch of YouTube videos. We're like, in comic book 377, you can see that he has a third eye, and that's because of his trip to the third planet. Like, it's all that shit. You got to go, oh, okay, thank God I've got you, because otherwise I'm just lost for 3 years.
I get it. He's got a third eye now. Does that make him evil now? Because the other guy had a third eye. Like,
yeah.
Charlie's Throne, throw up. I'm now going to take you back to Dormammu.
But the good thing about those earlier Marvel movies is that for the fans that were like, in the background, you can clearly see Steve Rogers' costume, which was only seen once in, that's great for you. And every other fan's just like, that was a cool movie.
Yeah.
Like, there's enough for everyone. If you want to get really deep and see it, and there's references and nods to people who have followed the comic books, And that's fine. Like, for Batman, I'd be geeking out for stuff like that. I remember that from The Long Halloween, or like you would see that. For every other fan, it's like, that was a cool Batman movie. So that's horses for courses. Now it feels like you've got to be an MCU expert just to watch the movie. And then there's all these nods to stuff that I don't understand because I haven't read a Doctor Strange comic ever.
You also didn't see WandaVision. So...
Oh, I saw enough of WandaVision.
Enough to understand, but it's like, you need to go and watch a TV show for this to make
sense. Yeah, I hate movies that require me to do homework. Like, why the hell have I got... And they should. Marvel should release a, like, in order to enjoy this the most, you should have seen all of WandaVision. Like, it needs to come with a fucking reference guide.
It fucking should. It should be like, to enjoy this at the max, see WandaVision, see Doctor Strange, and probably see Infinity War.
What If is important. Like, what if it's important? if you want to get right across it, what if? And I was like, well, what if it's just one shot nonsense? Like, why do I care about that?
You know, it's just like,
but now it's not. It's like, well, shit. So I consume enough pop culture right through the whole board to be like, okay, well, I knew that there was, say, I collect soda, the Funko sodas. There was a Captain Carter Funko soda from What If, and I was like, well, she's important. Yeah. That's weird that that's
I don't think that was important. Like, the What If wasn't important for that aspect of it.
But you're just like, oh, well, that's where that's from.
Yeah, I guess,
like, Captain Carter doesn't turn up in any other show apart from What If. So if you were like, well, oh shit, okay, well, yeah, I get it. She got the super serum instead of Steve. Yeah. That makes sense. Like, you can put that together quickly in your mind. But because I'd seen What If, I'm like, oh, there she is. Like, you know, that was cool to see because What If's animated and this is real life. So, you know, there is a bit of that, But sometimes now, even as a hardcore Marvel fan, I'm sitting there going, wait, who's that guy? You know, like, oh, was that, particularly with like Captain Marvel. I'm not a, certainly not a Captain Marvel fan.
No.
And I was like, oh, was that her friend? I think that was her friend.
I've seen Captain Marvel once. Like I said, that's my...
We saw Captain Marvel once. Sorry.
Jet-lagged. I've seen it twice. You saw it
one and a half times.
One and a half times because we fell asleep in a giant, beautiful theatre in LA.
Yeah, but we were there and we're like, we should go and see that Marvel movie.
Yeah,
and
we fell asleep.
Well, fair enough too. It was pretty shit.
It was pretty
I go and see it, and it's definitely worth the cinematic experience.
It's a beautifully shot film. It's well thought out. It's dark. It's creepy. Don't stay to the last scene because it's not really worth it. Just watch that on YouTube.
The very last scene.
Scene. Don't worry about that. Just watch it.
There's a mid-roll scene that's worth it, and then just leave.
I think it's definitely worth seeing. I think you're definitely right. You need to start picking and choosing your Marvel movies. I'm not rushing out the door to see the next Love and Thunder until I see the reviews. Actually, no, that's probably a lie. I'll probably see it because of Taika. But other than that, like, I'm not going to go rush out and see the new Ant-Man movie.
Like, yeah, which sounds like it's sort of exploring similar tropes as well.
Yeah, and I'm not rushing out to see, you know, Secret Wars until I know the bit more of a backstory. Like, Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, I'll probably see opening night. Or opening week,
and Guardians is probably the one that.
And Guardians, because I love James Gunn. I rewatched the Suicide Squad again, and it's definitely holds up and great. And I love Peacemaker, so anything James Gunn does, I'm going to watch. But yeah, I'm not rushing out to see all the movies now.
On the night, I certainly enjoyed this because of the elements we've talked about that you did. Given time, it feels like you've cooled a bit more, and I've warmed a little bit.
I just want to watch it again, and it was long. It was relatively long as well. Like, it was a bit drawn out.
When it hits Disney Plus, we'll do a proper review, mate. Yeah, yeah. Like, let's go and have a review of it. But I'd be interested if you've got an opinion on this. Given that we've kind of middled in terms of where we're at, you can hit us up, masterpodcasters@gmail.com, or our Instagram, the Facebook.
Sure.
Whatever, I don't know. Sure. Not getting a huge amount of traffic, but whatevs, it's there.
I was listening to your podcast the other day. You should do this, and I'm like, just write it down. I'm gonna forget.
Yeah. If you see Killing of Sacred Deer and want to yell at me,
no one's gonna watch that too. Like,
they should.
You should, because Shannon recommends it. But if you actually watch it, can you let us know? I'm interested.
I'll be fascinated.
Or if someone's already seen it
and likes it, let me know. All right. Well, that's it from me. Thank you very much for listening. And from Jake.
What do you want me to say in a boring tone, Shan?
I want you to say, talk to me about the watch you're wearing.
The watch I'm wearing? It's a Samsung watch. It's a Active 2. It lights up. It's a smartwatch.
Cool.
I've got a leather band or a metal band. It's the one of those, you know, rubber bands.
I mean, he's an impersonator. A fake.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you the following urgent announcement. You, yes you, put down that oversized bottle of Scrumpy and listen here. Do you like being entertained? Do you like television? Do you cringe at culturally insensitive, sexist, racist, problematic jokes in not quite old enough television shows? Do you like old-timey announcers who keep asking inane rhetorical questions, who go on and on so much that you just want to suck them right in the gusset? Do you like the letter H? Well, do we have the show for you? Built for people who love TV, where three rapscallions dissect two television shows, one old and one not so old, for a probable audience of 1-7. So dust off your flares, jump off your chamber pot, and a third old-timey product joke, it's time for Hardly TV History!